Benny.
Yes, I know.
And I'm, what do you call it? Smoker, passive smoker.
All right.
Because my husband was there.
Right.
And my father, so that's been with me all my life.
We're now recording. To read some of the Western newspapers, when Imran Khan brings his bride here, she's going to be locked up in a miserable, dirty city, not free to do anything she wants, a prisoner.
Who told you that?
It's what I've read in the papers, but
no.
I'm asking you, is it true?
Of course it's not. No, no, it isn't true. It depends upon the family. It's a very enlightened family, and he's got sisters, I think, who are professional girls working and so on. And he himself, I mean, he may have turned Muslim in that sense, but he wouldn't sort of do anything like that, no.
You've known this city for more than half a century.
Half a century, yes.
You've lived here as the foreign bride of someone who's local. How difficult did you find it at first to adjust?
Well, you see, we knew a lot of Indians in London. I was working with the Indians for the freedom of, you know, and I was working with Krishna Menon and that kind of person. So we knew a lot about it. We knew a lot about India and conditions. And when I came here, the reason why we delayed our marriage was because my mother-in-law and her family, they were a little, they didn't quite want us to be married. But afterwards, I think I didn't have any trouble.
Is there any advice you would give to somebody like Jemima who's coming to live here as, not perhaps quite knowing what she's going to find here?
Be yourself, be kind, don't be critical. Learn the language as soon as you can, so as Fez told me, or otherwise you think people are talking about you. But I learned Urdu as quickly as possible, and I had a tutor as well. She should learn to speak in Urdu as quickly as possible. And wear the native dress, because that's what anybody who comes here does that, even if they're just visitors, and they always wear the native dress, because people here don't like to see legs and arms and so on and so forth. They're not used to them. So no, she should be herself. She should be kind and understanding and realize that all the dirt and the filth was created by the British when they... I mean, in that sense, it's post-colonial, isn't it? Let's face it. So I think if she wants to accept it, it'll be all right. And it's up to Imran also. He's got a nice father, nice sister, so I don't know why she shouldn't be happy. She'll find a lot of problems regarding sanitation and so on and so forth. That's up to her to make her house livable, and they'll have plenty of money, so she'll be able to do it.
What do you think she'll find the biggest shock comparing life in prosperous Richmond to life in Lahore?
Well, there's a poor Britain also, you mustn't forget that. Very poor Britain. I think sanitation and things like that, cleanliness, she'll find that a problem. Adjusting to that. And adjusting to poverty. Adjusting to poverty all around her. In the worst possible form. Particularly children and child labour and things like that. She'd have to adjust to that. She can't start criticising these things. If they belong to an infrastructure which has eventually to change. So,
as a woman, how restrictive would she find it? Would she be able to mix socially? Would she be able to shop by herself?
Well, she'll shop in a car with a driver, and there are plenty of shops which cater for ladies like us, you know, the superstores and so on, and they'll get to know her, so shopping will be no problem. She'll find anything that she wants there that was either smuggled in or brought in. No problem to buy things. And no, she won't live the kind of life that people think she will. She'll lead the upper-class life. And she'll be very comfortable, very happy.
What about parties?
Yes, there'll be parties. She won't be able to drink. But I suppose Imran will see that the parties that he runs or the parties that are run for him don't have drinks around. But she can mix, yes. People will want to see her mix with her and so on. But she, my life was different. My husband was a writer. And, it was understood that his friends were male friends. And not many of them, none of them brought their wives along to parties. And if they did come, they sat aside with me. But I accepted that. And I made a lot of friends like that, you see. But there's less mixing now because the mullahs are sort of raising their voices. But it's up to the family what kind of party you have.
I get the impression, just from talking to you, that you've really rather enjoyed your life in Lahore, and you think that she probably enjoyed her life here as well.
I think she will, yeah. I don't enjoy it now, of course, without Fez, because so many of my friends have passed away too, which is very, very sad. Very sad. And so I live here alone. My daughter lives there. And my lovely grandson has gone off for 4 years for medicine. And she's very busy. She is in television. Her husband is a professor. And then the other daughter around here, she's principal of an arts college, and her daughter is just going off now to do her 3 years filmmaking, she's chosen. And her son is in Montreal at McGill. He's doing, psychiatry and so on. So the family is sort of now scattering. So I just lead my life as I want to. I work 3 days a week at the Human Rights Commission. 3 mornings a week. The rest, I think, I deserve. I deserve to rest. That's all.
If Jemima came to you for advice when she settled in, and she says, "Look, I've got a British passport. Should I keep it or should I become a Pakistani national?" What would you advise?
She can have two. I think she can have two passports, and I think Imran and she should sort that out. It's not my decision. It's a decision between those two. I think she should have two passports.
You
didn't. For one thing, my mother said, "Keep your British passport." You know, she's such a dear. And then I asked the Brits here also, and they said, "You'll lose certain advantages if you have only a Pakistani passport, or if you have both passports." They said, "Keep your British passport." And then something very funny happened. I had an invitation to go somewhere. Where was it? And the security refused to let me go. So I went to the British High Commission and I said, "This is the situation, and I want a passport. I want to revert to my British passport because I want to go to this international seminar." He said, "That's all right, Mrs. Fairs. But," he said, then I thought something's coming. He said, "Tomorrow is Saturday, then comes Sunday. You won't have it on Monday." You know, that was his one. So I said, "That's all right." So after that, I didn't sort of chop and change. Then they have given me a passport, British passport, because now we have to register with the police. That was a sort of, because the Pakistanis did something also, so the Brits also said you have to have a register. So I told Pakistani security, "I'm not going to register with the police. You can arrest me, you can do anything you like. I'm not going to register with the police." So that came in the press. "Mrs. Fairs refuses to register with the police." So anyway, it was sorted out. And they gave me a visa for the length of my passport. And I had just renewed my passport, so it's all right. It runs out this year. But I don't intend to travel anymore.
If Imran's bride is a bit homesick and wants company of other British nationals, is there an expatriate community here?
Yes. There's an American association, there's a British association. You see, all the women who were married to Pakistanis have, we have something on it, X or Y, something sort of determine that we are not sort of all there. We have a Pakistani husband. And this organization was fighting to have that removed. And I'm not sure whether they, because I was not interested in that. But there are lots of nice people for her to meet. But she wouldn't have any problems.
You've been here right from before partition, right down to the present. You've witnessed the events which...
Written two books, too.
Yeah, you've seen Lahore and Amritsar in different countries.
Mm.
I mean, what are your feelings about partition from this vantage point? And you feel it's a tragedy, or do you think it's something that was inevitable?
This is my personal opinion. My husband used to say there was no alternative, because the Muslim and Hindu situation was such that probably the Muslims would have become not a minority, but an unfortunate group. He thought it was the right thing, but I didn't, because if the India and Pakistan had become a socialist country, that would have been ideal, but couldn't become that. And then you see, as he was right, the richest people here were the Hindus, and the Muslims were not. No, I think it had to be. But as it's turned out now, well, I don't know where we are heading. The worst thing is the fundamentalism. That's what's going to drag us down, I think.
If partition was inevitable, was the violence which accompanied it inevitable?
Yes, nobody anticipated that. They didn't anticipate the fact that there was so much hatred. Because in our own village, in Fez's village, Hindus were living within a stone's throw, and all over that area, Sikhs and Hindus and Muslims were living side by side, cheek by jowl. And nobody thought that would happen. Nobody thought it would happen. With the rape and the murder and everything, nobody thought that.
When did you first get a feeling that there was this violence in the air? Was there any incident that made you realize how deep the hatred was?
Oh, yes, because I was in Lahore, and the trains were coming with nothing but bodies, dead bodies, I mean. And we were in Kashmir, and my mother and father were there. They came for 6 months, and they went traveling around. And we said that nobody will be safe, so they had better get out. So we hired a truck, and I went down to Murray, and they came down to Lahore. And they were told that... you better have something to cover yourself. I mean, people were frightened. That's when I first got the idea. And then, from Murray, there were a lot of Sikhs there. And they wanted to get to Lahore and onwards. And we said, yes, we'll hire the lorry. There were a group of our people. We were very jolly. Goodbye. We'll come and visit you, and so on and so forth. Don't worry. And they were massacred on the way down before they got to Rawalpindi. We gave them water and food and everything, and they were massacred.
How do you know they were massacred?
Oh, well, I mean, the Pathans came down from the hills, and the people came screaming and said the gutters running with blood, and we went down there. Every woman, and they were mostly women and children, they were massacred, old men and everything.
You witnessed some of the scenes, the aftermath.
I mean, I went there, and we knew they were massacred. I mean, it's they were, because the Pathans came from the hills. I mean, it's a known fact. They didn't get to Rawalpindi. That's when I first thought. And then we had to get to Lahore, myself and children, and another woman who's married to a Pakistani. We put on burqas and carried Qurans, because we were in Pakistan, to get down to Lahore. Then I realized that it was, murder. And then the reports came, and so on and so forth. And Fez went he went to India, to the camps there, to rescue somebody. and he came and told us. And then there was a place here north called Potoki. There was a terrible massacre, chasing the women through the streets of Potoki. He wrote an editorial on it.
Were you shocked by the extent of the sexual violence during partition?
I was. Hadn't come across that. I was. And some of the women were taken away, of course, and never heard of again. Some of the Muslim women. There have been many stories written about. There was a film made, wasn't there, about that also. No, it was a madness afoot. Terrible. One doesn't know how many people died, really. But that, it's not history either. It's not history because these confrontations are still going on in India, as you know. So to say it's history, it isn't history. It's a running thing, like the Israelis and the Palestinians. And look what's happening in Bosnia and with the Serbs. Who would have thought of that? Who would have thought of that? I would never have thought of that. They were living next door to each other. So one doesn't know what the depth of this hatred and religious hatred and others, one doesn't know how deep it is and when it will ever end and how you can end it.
Let me, if I may, ask you one last question. It's one of those impossible questions, but let me ask it. In India, the left is still strong.
Calcutta and everywhere. Yeah.
In Pakistan, that whole progressive left tradition seems to be in derail. What went wrong? Why no left in Pakistan?
Well, I think that, I suppose it's something to do with Islam also.
But why institutionally didn't the left survive? Why is there no Pakistan Communist Party worth
it? There were several. That's the whole thing. There was never one really strong. I think that in India, the Communist Party really was in Bengal, that area, the strength of it there, and it survived, it's still there.
But there are so many left intellectuals who became Pakistanis, and yet the left...
Not many.
INA veterans, people connected with the progressive movement in the widest form.
Not really. No, they were in India. People like Mulk Rajanand and Sajjad Zahir and these two, they were in India. And then, you see, I think it was something to do with Islam as well. There is that. Because Hindus, the progressive writers, were never strong on their religion. Whereas the Muslims were. It was a sort of conflict, I think. No, there. I think that the strongest remained there.
So Islam squeezed out political ideology?
No, don't say that. I don't think so, but Islam, I think, is stronger. Didn't squeeze it out, it's stronger. And then the pressure from all sides in here has always been religion and Islam. It's coming there also, on the other side. Won't be long before it comes there, and in fact it's there also. It is to keep out the political life of the people when you turn to religion. I mean, it is turned to. That's the more profitable for a government.
So you wanted to ask some questions in Urdu?
Okay,
we're now recording a television interview. When you came here as a bride from Britain half a century ago, how difficult was it to adjust to Lahore?
Well, people were very helpful, that is one thing, and Fez had many, many friends. But there weren't many English women married to Indians, it was then. So it was more difficult to adjust to the family than anything else, and to learn the language and learn to wear the dress properly and adjusting to food, climate, everything was difficult. But if you say, well, this is a game for keeps, then you make up your mind to do it, and then you have to do it with grace. And I learned to do it with grace.
In those days, perhaps Lahore was a more tolerant society. Today, Islamic fundamentalism is stronger. Will that make life more difficult for Jemima?
You see, we didn't mix with English people. Fez had a tremendous following of his own writers and so on, but that didn't bother us. But she will have to make up her mind, of course, where she wants to live, how she wants to live, the pattern of living. And I think it will be difficult. She'll have to make lots of adjustments. I think so. But if she does them with grace and with happiness and sort of makes it look as though she really likes living here, then it'll be all right.
But will the strength of Islam, the style of Islam nowadays, make life more difficult, make adjustment more difficult now than in the 40s?
I think it will, yes. She'll have to make more adjustments. She'll have to be more careful. She'll have to tread more carefully. Because then you must remember it was a mixed society then. There were Hindus and Sikhs and Muslims, and we had all kinds of friends. And there was no enmity, obvious enmity. And now she will have to be Muslim. There's no choice. I won't say it would be hard, but she'll have to be sort of coached in the way to live and so on and so forth.
If she wants to make it work, and she obviously does want to make it work, what advice would you give her? What does she do?
Well, she has this lovely hospital which has gone up. She can take a really true interest in that. This will really please people. And she can show that she really enjoys being here. Make friends, not with the sort of necessarily elite, but with the average people, the people that come to the hospital. She can do work there also, there's no doubt about it. She can be very useful there, as long as she learns the language. Because what Imran has done is something magnificent in this short time. He's done it really on his own. And there she can be very useful.
The British papers who've been out here and had a look at Lahore, where Jemima's going to live, have said it's a dirty, smelly city, that women have a terrible life, that she'll be more or less chained up and in the dark.
Ridiculous. I think women have a terrible time in many countries, not only in Pakistan, but they're not chained up at all. Wearing the burqa now is a sort of going out, and sometimes the husband insists with his own people that she wears a burqa or keeps parda. But women are out at work now, and they are demanding freedom, and they are demanding education, and she will see for herself when she comes here. You don't see many people on the street, because nowadays there is a little bit of, well, women are a little bit afraid to go out alone. They like a man to be with them if possible. But unfortunately you don't find, if a girl is being accosted or anything, you don't find men stand up for her on the street. That you don't find. She has to look after herself.
So chivalry is not the whore's main virtue?
Well, I think that it's not a question of chivalry. It's a question of what will other people say if I stand up for this woman who doesn't belong to me, sort of thing.
One question, please, from the radio interview. When you talked about parties, and the role of women in parties, that was quite interesting.
Will Jemima be able to go out, party, have a good time, have the sort of social life she might have now in London?
No, that doesn't exist here. I mean, that kind of life doesn't exist here, but there are plenty of parties. She will make her own friendly groups and have parties. And parties aren't everything. I mean, you invite people to the house, you have a dinner, you have a chat, you have some music. You make a party sound as though it's a sort of madhouse. There's nothing like that here. The young people have their parties and thoroughly enjoy them. I mean, my grandson, they have their parties. But you have to be careful. But she's married to a man of importance. And parties would be something very pleasant, I think, with him around. I'd like to be at a party with him around.
But these would be tea parties?
Yes.
There won't be champagne parties?
No, there won't.
Don't move on, please.